This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
In any case, that's going to happen, whatever. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Alan, does that make sense that we'll move around and we'll stay put?
Sure.
Yeah.
I thought you
were
sure.
Yeah, no, it is. Oh. Very happy to have Denise Lever talk with us this morning. I think many of you have met Margaret Addison also. The ranks are swell. Let's, if we can, I'd like to keep it in the same manner as we have it now. In other words, I'd like to depend on your questions or your senses of things.
I think we ought to have a try. Isn't there somebody we can try now? This is serious crime.
Is anyone has got a phone?
I got picketed in San Francisco for bad writing. Isn't there somebody we could try for bad writing to get even?
let's pick it up simply with what your own concerns are. In other words, we had that whole session on the unconscious.
Or consciousness, I believe it was.
So I'd like to keep at it. Anybody want to bring anything up? Silent. Do you have anything? Yeah. 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 Well, listen. I think that would have some kind of what the distinction was, or yeah. My sense would be that this relates to the particular uses of this area by each of by Alan and Robert, as they say respectively. In other words, I think, but equally, no, I don't think I personally wouldn't want to put any precise distinction upon it. Robert, do you have any?
Yes, one thing that I did sort of get in my head some 10 years ago or so was to realize that the very act of seeing or taking grasp, this I got from Piaget's things on intelligence in the child, and since I wanted to think of the poem as a development of intelligence in and of itself, I was very drawn to read Curler. Depending on the mentality of apes and the whole Gestalt approach, and also Piaget's on how a child learns and comes to grips with language and dream and truth and also the whole idea of intelligence. There it became clear that in order for us to see at all we articulate, we actually only see what we have articulated from a much vaster area, so that when I was talking about the area in which we're concerned in writers is clear out to that boundaries, and what we admit is that beyond the boundaries of our creative activity lies much else. Or else we get the picture that Alan gives in which we are all inclusive, but this I don't. I mean, this is the real contrast here. So my feeling is that writing itself is an activity of this articulation, exactly analogous with the first activity in which you learn to focus and see things, and it's a coming to see things more and more, and that within language itself, which can turn into a very amorphous area, you articulate. You learn to articulate, but you also articulate in your own terms each time. I mean, just as you have your own eyes to learn to see with, and yet you've got a world in which the seeing takes place, I mean, the things you see, you do have your own spirit and soul. Oh, naturally, you can't escape that, and that the great adventure in language is to find its way of articulating this medium that could be almost anything. So I, for one thing, I then oppose taking over conventions. In other words, that which seems to me like the thing in relation to seeing, seeing what other people tell you is there, which is very different from focusing your eyes and learn. And always you're in the adventure, in the adventure of seeing and giving boundaries to things and having to admit new facts in order to see what is there from previous habits. Is this clear about what I mean, at least, about articulation? But actually, I don't remember that Alan said anything about an unarticulated consciousness, or, nor that I said anything about articulated. But when you introduce the word articulated, that's a word I like very much and have myself frequently used. I think writing is part of our continual growth, and see, the trauma isn't as interesting to me as the other thing you're always doing, which is operating, learning. The two terms we have, I grasp that fact, which is taking hold of things in the very beginning and always is how you take hold. And that is, the line, that the line has weight has always seemed to me to be something in the hand. And I saw that I really wasn't some sort of kinetic lunatic when on TV Stravinsky was talking about it was how he composed, and he was asked, well, why do you compose at the piano? And Stravinsky said, because intervals aren't something I hear, there's something in my hand. And unless my hand goes like this, he said, they're not on the page and they're not on the piano, but I play them on the piano because intervals are something in my hand. They're not a tonal concept. Well, I've always been hunted. Why, when the line is so, in one sense, well, we've been concerned with this, about the business heart and tongue. How did the hand enter in? But it has entered in when you write, and when it enters in, you have a whole new series of kinetics. You have all the things the hand feels, and you have it taking grasp of that. But I can't explain it. I mean, let's say it's so absolute that it's like asking, can I explain how? Oh, but it does enter in. Oh, but the hand has an immediate intelligence, which is quite as immediate as the tongues and the hearts, and so that the hand itself thinks and feels. And why is it, for instance, that your eyes can be way back at this point? You can read what you write, and the hand itself is so directly concerned in the writing that it's from that writing that you see.
And it makes a tremendous difference whether you type later.
Oh, yeah, sure it does. For me, I've got to be on that. It does. My hand has to get into the feel of it. But by the way, I have part of this because I earn my living typing so that I blot it out. I'm quite sure that typing, yes, it would be a tremendous difference because the movements and everything else the hand's doing there are different from the grasp of the pen.
But they're also particular. I mean, the hand is also intimately related.
I have a worthy writer's callus on my finger. My middle finger, which shows exactly the tension and pressure that has always gone in at a point of writing.
This, for me, gives me a distance between myself and the letter.
Boy, I would be thrown. If I had to think of it now. Absolutely. Well, see, the trouble, John, is that I certainly trick myself. I use the term absolute because if I'm asked like now to discuss it, I reject the idea. So I obviously am indulging and playing with an idea I won't face. I couldn't say anything about that. It must be a ghost that you heard that I was paying attention to that's coming in. Thank you for telling me, because now I know I have to deal with it somehow, but it throws me. I usually hate you. I mean, all my senses of resistance are...
I'm still centered, or still thinking of Alan's reading on Friday, particularly that long piece or long section of work he read at the end of the reading, which, unhappily, we didn't hear the end of, because he moved to the next room.
what I was extremely interested in, it's simply that the whole issue of ego, of intention, to my sense, had been outwitted by the very context of the material. In other words, he'd kept re-characterizing any differentiation. Any term of differentiation was not outwitted, but was outmaneuvered in a sense in the writing, because it came against immediately a further or an alternate or a complex of alternatives that constantly redefined it or put it back in the context of literally materialism, this outside, inside context of what I consider to be the state of being alive, as opposed to this question of the whole issue of what one intends to do as against what one is doing. Alan, what about this context of consciousness, or this articulation of consciousness?
Well, specifically, the time of writing on the whole set of drugs.
Yeah.
The sense that we're not truly alive.
In this one. For example, just before we came in, we were talking to one of you who mentioned that her husband is English, in other words, grew up in London and all, and had a fairly severe sense of what he was going to hear, to put it that way. And who questioned really the whole premise of what he'd heard of your writing, and then found to his own surprise that sitting here he was completely involved in it. And I think one issue of the fact that he was so involved has to do with the difference in the context. In other words, I think he came expecting you as a person to assert something that he as a person would find objectionable. But then the actual experience of hearing, he was involved not with a person, but with a whole characterization of a way, of the whole complexity of being alive, which I found interesting. This may assume things for him that he wouldn't himself agree to, but what are some reactions of your own to the Friday evening? Yeah. Who cares?
What a teacher. But I think the matter babble is a way of using language. I mean, although I'm perfectly familiar that just below the level there is a possibility of sinking into a matter babble, because I have it myself. But I always feel, again, it's like the exhaustion. In other words, my sense is that we are engaged in a creative effort in which the world comes into existence, which is our gift to it. Now, this is very... If you would have pictured Buddhism, in which the world is pictured as a thing in which you suffer, and you want to go beyond it, or as Alan has said, to go into a greater or more, for me, I'm very much a person of this world, and so my whole sense of what the poet does, the man does, is to create the world, is to participate in the creation of the world, and that is really a finding, which is a reciprocity. The matter babble is the relation to language is very much like your, you can create, you can certainly have eye babble, and you, if you
what's the relation between you and your reader? That
readers must also be concerned in this. You mean as if
co-creators or?
Yeah, I think that in reading we also are participating in the creation. We do as a human community, and so that all. As a matter of fact, the reason I feel this intensely, but I will be talking about it tonight when I talk about the work. There was a great discovery for me in life through those writers, and they have multiplied and multiplied and multiplied who have made life, who have articulated life for me in various, various ways. How amazing that two people who heartily hated each other, Pound and Lawrence, would both be, for me and for other people, keys to discovery of life. How fantastic that a man like Swift would open up life when he seems to have found it an utter mystery, but he opened up the possibility of misery in life. At one point, for instance, the poet Jack Spicer taught me to discuss. But I found out that I had discussed, that I had not been able to. Now, that's one thing I felt. Let's say, in the negative sense, I certainly found Alan's diary tedious, and at a point simply walked out and watched Nighthawks. But one thing I did notice, because hearing it was when you were in the political thing. That time I sort of, after a few parts that were funny, and then I left. One thing I noticed that is, in entering what you call the mind babble or something, there was a loss of emotional tone. If you take a poem like Kaddish, when you come to the end, the caw, 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 Lord, 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 and you hear it in a high reading, it mounts to a undifferentiated counterpart of kind of hysteria, also very much like any political orator, and you can no longer tell whether Alan is laughing, crying, because all feeling has disappeared, and you get an eruption, which is like the all violent outbreaks that no longer have the contours of what we call love, hate, all those things that are demarked areas of emotion. It's like a scream that, when recorded, nobody can tell what happened in the back of the scream. So part of what our information is in wanting. See, also, Alan does not make extensive use of the line that, as a matter of fact, all the rest of us have taken over in order to get these differentiations of emotion. In order, for instance, to tremble on the edge of something and find ourselves in another ship. But you do. By reducing, and the other thing that appeared in these diaries was the beginning, by reducing it way down so that there was not any strong passion, no passional. And there is a kind of, while it is releasing to hear sexual acts in a large community of people, because we realize that 300, the full capacity of this room and certain almost the capacity of the other room were all, as I said, smugly tolerant of sexual descriptions that people would have been violently opposed to 50 years ago, would have thought was intolerable to listen to. But at the same time, these, if you were to compare them with Lady Chatterley's Lover, think of the loss in this time of passional quality. I mean, we could hear, but the sexuality was had lost all noumenal quality and all passional quality, so that it was as mere as the very next act. And that I found. Now my interpretation of it was that I did notice that in a way it was like getting so quiet the hysteria had disappeared, the shouting, the thing that made a howl at the end. And so there was the beginning, the thing that we all found very valuable, to get to where you trembled, where you began to find the hidden
Equally, this same man that I spoke of a few minutes ago, his reaction to these aspects of the poem were very interesting. Again, he felt that you were saying something. In other words, he had come prepared to, let's say, to excerpt those parts from the context of the poem as a specific, you know, as cause for specific objection on his part. But the gain was simply, again, that he heard that as something you were saying, not distinct from what you were saying. In other words, he found himself not interested in making the distinction between your words on that ground. So that I'm very, very interested in the fact that this context could be created. Because I find, for example, in my own work, that I'm finally constantly tripping over the anticipation of things which the intention asserts. And here's the key, for example, that speech in King Lear, you know that very simple, where the philosopher says, "I have no eyes and therefore want no way, I stumbled when I saw," which can be read many ways, reasonably, because we assume we have eyes, or we say we have eyes, eyes to see, and articulation to be gained from this context of perceptive apparatus. Even so, I find that if I can't return to the world in some clear sense, if the world is only my anticipation of it, by my intention and my perceptions, then it's only my world, which is it becomes, if you have your world, I have my world. Yes, it's
world. Is that
what
you asked?
What one wants to do, as opposed to what one is doing. In other words,
I have no sense of intention. I don't understand really what you. What are you talking about when you talk about intention?
Intention.
The only intention I recognize is...
Well, the intention to write a poem.
Ah, but that's exactly where I disagree.
See, I would like to avoid the intention to write a poem.
Right. And yeah. I think it absolutely has to be avoided.
Yeah,
the intention to write a poem is the intention to write some poem, any poem, you know, a poem.
And that is no poem.
And that is to me, anathema.
Yeah.
Because what I believe is that the only intention... must be to give your attention.
But I want to avoid that.
To give your attention. No, that's an allowable and necessary form.
Why? Why?
Because the world is full of things which are interesting, and because I'm interested, I want to see what really is there, and in order to really see what is there. I want to look at it or listen to it attentively.
Well, all
of
this is intention.
Now, this attention arises upon it. It either does or it doesn't. And unless it arises naturally out of that attention, I'm not interested.
Well, then, in other words, I'm saying simply that what I've used as a means has been very often an intention, not an intention to write a poem, but literally what you said, an intention to pay attention. And I begin to realize that in my own work, this is leading me into a very narrow box indeed. In other words, it's anticipating all the possibilities of experience because it's paying attention to them. I was thinking, in contrast to Roberts, take care by the throat and throttle it.
Oh,
yes,
well,
but that's a peculiar one, considering.
Well, there are actually two processes. There's one, the giving of attention. We have nothing to do with whether or not one is going to write a poem. One day in Maine, my husband and son, we were at a garage, and they were busy with the car. They were talking to the garage man, and they were doing something, and I had to wait for a long time. It was a hot day, and it was just a garage on the main road between two towns, and didn't look particularly interesting. And I walked to the back of the garage, and was just sort of vaguely looking out at a small landscape that was framed by some trees there, and it was just an ordinary little piece of landscape. But as I happened to be standing there for half an hour looking at it, I began to really see that landscape, and it was the most beautiful place in the whole world, because I began to really see it. And so the giving of attention to anything is rewarding. And whether a poem comes or not is something else. If a poem is going to come, a strange thing happens, that very faithful attention to what happens at the instant where the magic enters the poem, leaves one, and one recoils almost with a sort of epileptic sort of convulsion. It's like a snake head that's drawn back, something that was very poised and intense, just kind of goes right back. It's like rolling up the whites of the eyes, and something else enters it. But this is something which you can't possibly will, and it happens or not. It only happens if you do give your faithful intention, attention to something without intention, and it may or may not happen. But
well,
if it doesn't happen, you're still rewarded because you've seen something.
Well, that's true.
Really?
I don't understand
let me give an instance. Alan, for example, has been living in India, and while there he would go for, down to the Ghats, where corpses literally are burned in a ritualistic manner. and if one is sitting there, and as Alan, as you described it, one's fear is that there is some aspect of living still actual in reference to the body that one sees being burned, as long as it's literally a corpse, or what, how should we describe it? With a man whose job it is to push the corpse back onto the flames that he should, if the body should fall off. And you were talking of this one man who was there, as one's attention was literally, I suppose, caught with such intensity and anguish upon this whole concept of life and death. There's a man who was there, you said, he kept saying, without speech, but just be there. Don't be anything there. Be there. It was be alive, with no words. And that, you see, I found that's where I go back to the speech at Gloucester's of the whole issue of the way. Because my nature leads me to want, as Robert or now you are saying, I want to pay attention to everything. But I begin to question the whole issue of an exclusion of reality by a hypersensitivity to the I'm speaking to myself only.
Well, if you induce hypersensitivity in yourself, that's
lousy.
Yeah. Of course.
And I wondered about the intent, because it seemed to me, for instance, while the political poem actually was, to some extent, a comic poem, but it was presented, and this is what sort of threw me, it was presented as if it were a counterpart of Blake, presuming, I suppose, on most of us not having read Blake. The thing is that I did have comment to Alan is that his negative figures about America, about the world politics, have become increasingly intentional and non-responsive. They've become stereotypes, even over the stereotypes of observable how. He attacks refrigerators. Well, that was a stereotype when Rex Rose attacked refrigerators in that poem that was preceded Howl, the poem about you did it, you bastards out there, you killed him, the Dylan Thomas poem, which is probably the first Howl-like poem. What Alan added to Howl was Christopher Smart, not Blake, because Alan has no such mythology. I mean, as Blake, he does have Christopher Smart root directly in Howl and in Cottage through
I would say one thing. That happened to me was that part of your poem is to eat the refrigerator, and it becomes poetry. Therefore, after you do that, the refrigerator comes back at you, and it's
that's
there.
What's serious. Yeah. That's what I find serious, that this happened. Yeah. But everything is where it is.
The comic element. But I felt there must be negative images that are not these same ones we've been seeing for, you know, that have been in every kind of reaction poem for a half a century.
See, I have it brought home to me now in the classes that we're working with, with the context of poems that we're getting. In other words, the mimeograph sheets or whatnot. If you simply look through them, you have a wide variety of senses of writing. You have a wide variety of instances of writing, much more interestingly. And last time in the class, we suddenly had the occasion we were offered two possibilities. Either we could judge the poems, which was, I felt, of no interest whatsoever, or we could read them, which I felt was more interesting. But I began to realize that my own habits could be very intrusive in that context. For example, I could say this poem is not interesting because I'm not interested. And I began to question this whole concept of writing as being careful. Now, this isn't my own habit. You know, I'm speaking very much for myself. But I'm trying to think of what context for writing more grants the possibilities of being alive. That's, I think, what we've been talking about in one sense, perhaps vaguely. I put it vaguely. But how do we realize that we're alive and writing? That's what I keep wondering about. Yeah. Sort of as Denise, in the actual writing, I'm unaware of my intention, happily, thank God. Excuse me.
That which differentiates the poem from a competent poem. The magic.
Yeah. That's what I'm trying to think of. How do I outwit the limit of my own intelligence? For example, one has habits. I can't either. Well, for example, going back to the issue of handwriting, when I write with a pencil or a pen, I become all involved with how it looks. I mean, for example, I taught, I have the reverse problem. I taught for a short time first grade, which I was teaching kids how to write and get the students of this very very deliberate articulation of each letter, so that when I found myself writing, I began looking at my writing and describing. I was very worried whether it was blotted. That was one sense. Then the typewriter somehow, through habits of use, empirically had senses of driving a car are useful in this way as an illustration. No, because again, I became so self-conscious of hearing myself talk.
I'm sorry, but I didn't.
It's lovely to induce
hypersensitivity.
Oh. Because what you experience to induce hypersensitivity, I don't think is going to be of the same, your experience is not going to be of the same quality, let's say. As those things that you experience through natural, through a state of naturally occurring hypersensitivity. And man is not meant to be hypersensitive all the time. There's a natural balance between one's times of heightened sensibility and one's times of ordinary average sensibility and one's times of numbness, or just like between sleeping and waking, and they're all necessary to a whole person. And if you induce hypersensitivity in order to write a poem, it's going to show. You know, it's going to show just like sort of if I injecting color into the orange. Certainly, I would limit an orange that got its color by lightning naturally. Yes. You're talking someone who just is that way, not somebody that's trying to make himself that way. Well, I'm making a distinction. I'm making a distinction between them. That's exactly what I'm doing. Well, see, I think this comes out of my sense that there is an order in things. I don't look on life and experience as chaos on which the artist imposes order. I think the order is there, and the purpose of the artist is to discover it if he can. And so, in the tribes and the sort of grasp of a man's being, the tribes and the senses of half a century of Japanese and civil, I think there is an order. It's what Hopkins called in inscape. The order of what actually is what interests me, not the order that you could kind of make by picking something up and moving around quickly.
We've been talking about psilocybin and LSD and levels of consciousness.
I think they're quite comparable to the whole tendency in our period to use the same thing on plants, to force growth plants and force growth fruits and force growth animals. I mean, the fact that you dope plants and develop them chemically, and in the same period dope human beings in order that they, for instance, in order that they no longer experience anxiety, or in order that they have, you know, happy pills for happy times, and in order that they have poetry pills for poetry times. These are identical events, obviously, because you also want to feed a tomato so it'll grow tomatoes in non-tomato times.
Let's go back to the context that Charles has introduced. John, this is just not to interrupt you, but just to, I want to clear the context of the fact that nothing will happen in our time, as Secretary McNamara's statement, for the condition of our world, and the further statement that by the third generation, that is by our children, by our grandchildren's time, our genetic control will be possible. So the control of humans.
You know, so much of that, this is all sociocracy. Yeah. It's like the business of the mechanic writing. I think we're losing the only thing which is interesting, which is what are we
doing?
Yeah, what are we doing, and what are we talking about? Because this whole aspect of it is loaded. It's definitely being applied by a total society for the purposes of creating a useful species. And certainly, we're not here for either of us.
Perhaps not actually experience, but if you stand perhaps at our look at some landscape, you're going to see it. You know this. And this thing, to me, this is an event of curiosity. You want to see. You want to go into this area of seeing. And I feel that this is what not drives, but is part of Alan's service. I mean, this is a curiosity from wanting to see. You know, and you can't get there by will.
Only when
If you give your attention, it will give itself to you. That's all I'm saying, really. I think we're getting much too, as far as I'm concerned, we're getting too involved in context. Is that it all? But I mean. I think these two directions, I was asking this morning whether I thought of something after reading you or whether you said it. I think I can say it. To be able to know and say, I am here, and not be saying, I am not there. Is that what you said?
Well, that's lovely.
To be able to say, I am here, and not be saying, I am not there.
Because you were trying to get the negative in on your picture.
In some form, I have a line that says, if we're here, let's be here now.
Well,
I'm interested in being here now, but I think that if you try too hard, then you're not really being out. You're so busy thinking about how you want to be here now, but you're not here. You don't have time to see what's going on around you. But you're preoccupied with the idea of doing so. And that's the plan for it here in the film. Natural-born resources sufficiently, and they go somehow afield to try and do things that actually are in them already. They don't use the way that is really under their hands. They
Carol?
George.
Oh, and I think there's a difference in the experiential thing. That's what, in my original posing of the articulation, I said it was because I was very much a man of this world. Although I have otherworldly things, but I really resist them so much that they happen extremely rarely, and that seems too often. They go both ways. But I want to describe. I want to describe some sense. I really often I will find myself in writing in the position that between these two they define. I find myself trying to say, and I think it was contained in this, you want a feeling that's going to be natural. You find instead of being even patient for that, you decide, I don't want a feeling that's unnatural. And there you are hung up with this thing you don't want, which is really quite a shadow. And I find myself often in writing, when I'm not with it, that phrase is really very good, when I'm not with it and feel bound in to write a poem. Now, I only write poems when I'm ready. But then I sometimes get fooled on this ready business because I so much would like to have that feeling again of being with it. I won't wait till that total tonic feeling. Here's where I entirely agree with Denise, is that I wait for a tonic feeling that my body has, and I don't have any... And actually, at that tonic point, my looking, by the way, takes place all over my life or whatever, and I do very little of it. I mean, I'm surprised at how little, but there are intense moments. And then it's always a great pleasure. What returns? Sometimes there are things you never consciously saw. When we were talking about the unconscious, I said I'm aware, I see things I don't see, because they will return in these tonic moments and feed the poem. But in there are other bounden moments. When people say, well, Duncan hasn't written a poem, you know, for 2 months and he's dead yet. And so I care about that book. God, I'm going to be lost. There 5 poets are going to make it ahead of me. And I said, now come on, come on, come on, come on, make with it. Mama said do it every morning. At that time, you're going to be in the fix you were once in, you remember, when you ate the 4 bottles of Crack Jack. And that just may never work again. And actually, at points like this, the thing is, of course, I can't be, not much can be said about the times that I force a poem, because what happens is so awful that it's, that I don't let it get out to the light of day. But, so in an odd sense, I'm more unconscious than, let's say, Alan's approach, where it's very conscious and you project out in order to have this experience. I'm entirely dependent upon a total body tone. And then, I'll be caught in a moment when it starts happening.
What I object to is when people have experiences, they go out and search for experiences in order to be able to write poems about them. It's not charming at all.
Mr. Hawk? Bill?
Carol, for Jason, started to jump up.
Try underdoing it.
Because of who's the arbiter, that's what matters. Well, okay, if you don't enjoy being natural, so much fun of you. I think
not everybody could be in a circle around here. Couldn't there be something sitting and everybody facing a very big hollow in the middle? It's so different.
My God, it's where it is. And if we go back to the business of drugs, it's a very ancient way of opening the door. Because that's what I meant when I said I'm a man of this world and absolutely only have to do with the other world, under over world, at the boundary that is absolutely necessary, no more than is necessary. Now, my other part of the statement I didn't make is that all people, saints and everyone else who have ever wanted to be in the other world. By the way, they've made a very strong I am not there. They have made an absolute condemnation of this world. They've made a condemnation of the natural way. They've made a condemnation of the very but that natural way, as Olson says, always is a thing that we get from this thing called society that has named itself man's nature. I mean, you have to go to people who have intensely articulated it, and then when you find it, and I call it an articulation because they've been able to discard this attack upon the societal picture or support of it, and get through, and then you find that this doorway, back to Burma, it was looking at a pewter picture, not an induced hypersensitivity, but looking at the picture and falling in love with it, that he came to the gate. Now, drugs have been actually the gate. They've been both the gate to a world of poetry, which you find in Baudelaire. You find it way out of the context of the modern period. Yeah. It's been complicated in the modern period by the fact that it's banned by government so that it is a stereotype, anti-present society reaction. So you can hardly find that old area, though it's there. Look at Robert Graves. He certainly doesn't mean thumb my nose at the government when he wants to take drugs in order to be in the other world.
I'm very happy about it, and it's like this, but you're right, Carol. I don't think I'm really being judgmental. For myself, I feel I've been told that in all probability, barring acne, war, and so forth, I will be very long lived. If I reach the age of 80 or so, and I'm still in full possession of my scientific health and so forth, I know I've got another 20 years ahead of me, and I feel that I have, as far as experiencing life, through what I just have, without extra, without drugs or anything like that, that I've lived fully that way, and I've sort of come to the end of something. I'm not sort of against drugs like somebody that's taken the pledge and won't drink. You know, as such, I would then, if I wanted to open more doors, I would be perfectly willing to open those doors that way, but I just feel that I haven't got time for such extra things because I want to live the ordinary thing.
I feel awfully threatened.
And as for other people, I think I'm not judgmental in this thus far. That I think a lot of people who are capable of having many very important experiences without drugs, they jump into drugs or all sorts of ways of inducing sort of extra experience without having had what they should naturally have first. But then perhaps there are other people who for all sorts of reasons are really blocked from just, you know, the ordinary things that we all share. They're just not capable of living very fully. They're numb. Something has numbed them. And if they have to unnumb themselves by taking some pill or something, well, okay, I'm not objecting to that.
Experience is useful in finally returning the technical universe.
But, you know, as well as that thing of whether one thinks there's very little time or whether one feels there is a lot of time, which is very, very, has very much to do with it, I'm sure, there's also the thing of whether, if some people are aesthetic and they want to wear, no, they don't want to wear hair shirts, but they do go around wearing hair shirts. They don't, they're not in love with the world. They either fear the world or hate the world or are dissatisfied with the world that we're in. And so they're looking for another world. They really want to blot out what is around them and get something else. But I'm the other way around. No, I don't. Actually, I must say that this spring I saw Paradise right in New York, and it was in the very dust. It's right there in the dust of the street.
Huh? Not at all. No.
He means the pot where the carrots
are.
The pot where the carrots are. The pot where the dead are.
That's right. They're on. Pot meal. They're on.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
What's your position on it?
Alan?
Certainly one thing we know, that let's say Burroughs is the clearest testimony we've got on any level of what this experience, that's right. let's say we all value experience, then Burroughs is in the immediate sense of knowing what it's like to be a Burroughs, the most testimony of what it's like actually living that life. Now he's a person, of course, who very clearly lived. The drug meant not what it meant to go to a rose garden. He ain't going to rose garden. The drug has changed from all the meanings that drugs meant before for men. Think of Cocteau with the opium dream, where it meant pain, but pain and the angels as they appear in Burroughs' eyes are very, very different, but we see it as they do. That's the thing in writing, I think. The difficulty of the... See, when I'm explaining what really are my intentions in the poem, of course it often sounds like I'm not there. As a matter of fact, I think it's not insignificant that I use Alan as a contrast more so you really see that I have more boundary with Alan, because I can say, here's a boundary, and this is very different from that. And yet, I can tell you something about articulation that Alan knoweth nothing of. On the other hand, this is, as I mentioned before, in the area of Kaddish he read, before he came to that Garbo My Karma, the whole section on the mother where everything is actually there and no fancy stuff, no other world stuff at all, that is as highly articulated as anything I know of. I didn't have to go home and say, so, you see that the effort to articulation is my life instinct and not a gain. I don't articulate any higher
than Alan does when he is entirely of this world. He has no other way to operate in relation to this world. He can't even use those four-letter words because they are stereotypes. He makes us see the genitals of his mother by not using the word cunt, by using gash, by using scarf, by using any and every other word, but the unusable ones are the ones we're fighting to get back from their stereotype and trying to use so that they don't, if, as I said, like God, Mary, and Jesus, they had become swear words, and we don't even see what it was that was behind it. When he has to actually, for once, bring us into the presence of a body, he cannot use any of the words he's famous for. And he doesn't. He articulates all the way through there. If you look, go home and look at your lines of Kaddish, and just take it in the structure, you will find long lines, yes, they're articulated with dashes into phrases. Now is the articulation you see on the page. And every one of those phrases has rhymes that articulate the movement of rhyme through. And they're all placed as if, by the time you would analyze that, by stressor, make sure you think it was masterminded, which it literally couldn't be. Now, not only can you not only do you louse up the poem when you try to have a poetic mood, you also louse up the poem when you try to make a structure.